Get this meeting started. I'm going to ask, I believe it's the clerk to call the roll.
City of Palm Springs. City of Indio.
Present.
29 Palms Bad, Mission Indian. Torres Martinez of Akuya Indian. Cavazon Bad, Akuya Indian. Agua Caliente Bad, Akuya Indian.
Here.
Yay.
City of Indian Wells.
Present.
City of Cathedral City.
Here.
City of Palm Desert.
Here.
City of La Quinta.
Present.
City of Blythe.
Here. Over here.
County of Riverside. City of Rancho Mirage.
Here.
City of Desert Hot Springs.
Present. We have District 5.
Yeah, District 5.
City of Coachella.
Present.
Chair, we have 4.
Thank you so much. With that, we'll move on to the Pledge of Allegiance. And I'm going to ask that we all hand the allegiance and pledge.
I pledge
move on to item number 4. This is agenda modification.
We have no changes.
All right, we'll move on now to item number 5, which is public comments on agenda items. Is there anyone that would like to address us on the agenda items? Good, we're on the roll. Move on to item number 6. This is the chair, Director Director's announcement. Director Director.
Yeah, as I mentioned to the Transportation Committee earlier today, our General Assembly is coming up. It is our 50th year, 50th anniversary. We are celebrating it in Rancho Mirage.
Good choice.
At the Penny Inn Parlor. And of course, we're celebrating Rancho Mirage because we like being in Rancho Mirage. And we're also celebrating because I believe we had executive committee meetings there 50 years ago. So it's back to the future, as it were. Tickets are on sale. Please sign up. We certainly like to have a full house of all of our elected officials from each of our member agencies. We do provide per diems for a meeting attendance for those that want direct deposit. Pass those along to Vaughn or anybody on our team. There's a form. We have to have a hard copy with your signature on it. And lastly, I do want to note for those that were not at the Transportation Committee meeting earlier, that our Caltrans District 8 for the Inland Empire was there, Catalino Panin, and he addressed the Transportation Committee, talked certainly about a lot of projects on Interstate 10. For those of you that have been out to Blythe or out to the Arizona, you see how much work Caltrans is doing on Interstate 10. And we also talked to him about the persistent management of the interstate out here, persistent issues on graffiti and trash removal, et cetera. We'll continue to work with Caltrans to improve the look of Interstate 10 going forward. With that, Chair, that's it.
Well, you had mentioned this, but I would like to just wish Mayor Evans a happy birthday and also a happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday.
Happy
birthday.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
On the occasion, I did make my famous chocolate brownies. They came from La Quinta, so we haven't planned on anything weird in them. That's nuts. The right side has no nuts, so I'm all yourself.
Happy birthday, both of you. All right, with that, we'll move on to item number 7. This is the consent calendar. It's recommended that we vote to approve it all, unless there's any other action. Is there a motion to approve?
Move to approve.
Second. There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
We do have Blythe as well as the D5 online. Can you please cast your votes?
Aye.
Blythe says aye.
2 ayes, any noes? Any abstentions? Seeing none, motion carries. We'll move on now to item 7.1. There are no board members. We'll move on now to item number 8. This is discussion or action. This is directly mentioned. Of the 2023 Goose Oil Recycling Filter Content Center. Erica.
Chair, committee members, this is one of our favorite items to share with you.
You all know that we run a used oil recycling program, and we rely on the creative geniuses in our community to advertise it. This year, I am pleased to announce that Antonio Coloma is a winner out of the Fair City of La Quinta. We did not do that because it was going to be Antonio is a third grader, and we almost had to do a recount because it turned out this is a repeat winning family. Gabriella, one couple years ago, would have come to all of you if we hadn't had COVID. So we'll acknowledge her hard work as well. These recycling events are outlined in your staff report. Antonio received a bike as the first place winner, and we're going to take a quick photo as well over here by the flag. Antonio, did you want to say anything? I got a little earlier. I just didn't want you to think I was hogging the mic here. We will just take a quick photo with our chair and the mayor.
Actually, Antonio, if you could come right into the middle, we'll all stand and
be yeah.
Oh, even better.
I think it would be cool if we all stand there.
Yes,
and then we'll be. We'll get in. And Tony, maybe get a little closer to this way, right? We'll get in here, right?
And look down.
Thank you.
Are we good?
Or do we
Does everybody
like
Maybe want to
okay.
Pass?
Okay.
One, two, chocolate.
Chocolate. Antonio. Yeah, I'm going to take a couple too. All right. Congratulations.
And just even there in the eyes, I also wanted to recognize his, their family, Gabriel, Mom, Maiden. Thank you very much for coming today.
Thank you.
That'd be a good photo to send to the desert sun. Well, that is just an information item. We'll go move on out. Item number B. This is the preview of CVAG's budget for fiscal year 2023-24 budget year. Birthday boy, welcome.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for being here, everyone. Won't take too much of your time. Just going to find the clicker. And before I jump into this, I do want to thank a couple of subcommittees of this committee. That's the Finance Committee and the Administrative Personnel Committee. They only meet a couple times a year, and they don't actually get a stipend. They get the finance department's blood, sweat, and tears, but they really help us along with the process. And just want to call them all out by name real quick on the Finance Committee. A big thank you to the City of Palm Springs, their Finance Director, Christopher Mooney, City of Cathedral City. We have our committee chair, Councilmember Gregory. He always has great input. Torres Martinez, Tribal Admin, Sean Isaac. Of course, Chair Milanovich from Agua Caliente, and City Manager of La Quinta, John McMillan's over here. Thanks for being on the committee. And Councilmember Weil, appreciate you on the Finance Committee. And I mentioned the other committee being the Administrative Personnel Committee, and our chair is on there. So thank you for being a part of that. Mayor Hernandez and Desert Hot Springs as well, Chair Matt, Vice Chair Mattis, and the past chairs on there, Lisa Middleton of Palm Springs. And of course, our birthday lady, Mayor Evans from La Quinta, sits on that committee, Chair Milanovich, and then Councilmember Wild. So thank you all again for the time you put in that. So let's just jump into that agenda. So I got six topics to cover, and I'm hoping only to take a minute or two each. And I got my chest clock going, so we'll move along swiftly here. So Questica budget software, we instituted this software last year. It's our second year using it in our budget, and we're really 1 year in. And I just wanted to point out, last year was really focused on integrating our financial accounting system to the software, and we were able to move past that integration phase and really look at the capabilities of the software. And we really only scratched the top of that, so we're excited to keep learning more each year. But we're able to automate processes and create efficiencies, remove manual steps, and reduce errors. And they're really one of my favorite things that came along this year with the new software was utilizing reporting to give our departments dynamic data so they can make better decisions. And just to touch on that, really for the first time since I've been here, we had some budget to actuals to share, and that really helped some of our departments pivot on certain projects as they learn some more physical information. And that's really neat. And just want to point out, last meeting, you all authorized us to work with Barry Dunn, a consultant, on getting a new ERP system. That's the big financial accounting system that's going to tie into the budget software. And you know, we're excited to interface with that as we move forward. All right, so that was our first section. Moving right along, the budget process recap. I mentioned we're doing budget to actuals. The staff were working on the budget last year in probably July, August timeframe. We met with the finance committee in February, the end of the month, and we actually brought in our actuary from CalPERS. Each of our agencies has this really smart person that picks the day I'm going to die and puts it into a formula, and that's how they get how much we owe on that. Basically, they do a lot of that kind of morbid stuff. Anyway, we had Kirk come, and well, this is one of his slides, and we learned, and you all probably know that as unless you're a public school, it's a two-year lag on when those valuation reports are ready. So the most recent valuation report from June 30th, 2021, if you look on the bottom line there, all the way over, it's about 90%, 96% of funded status. And the line above that, about 500,000, that CBAG owes on its unfunded accrued viability. And the reason we got the finance team together in February is because we know that's not the full picture. June 30th, 2022, there's investment losses at CalPERS, and that's going to swing. That's reports coming out next month, and that's going to swing the liability back up to about a $2 million level. So we wanted to be proactive. We had to actually kind of present that. And one thing we figured out was we were doing the right thing by making these additional discretionary payments over the minimum. And we were reaffirmed that, and we wanted to increase that to 250,000 instead of 200,000, which was our former plan. And we'll evaluate that each year as part of the budget process. And that really provides stable payments over time. And then we took this some of this information to the Admin Personnel Committee back in April 24th, and we kind of showed the same information there, and they concurred, and that $250,000 pay down is incorporated in the budget document. And another thing we talked about with the Admin Personnel Committee in April was cost of living adjustments. We look at that every year. We talked to other agencies, and we recommended and came out with a 4% increase based on consumer price index for the relevant area here, 4% for salaries and 7.3% for membership dues, which is really not even the base rates for all of our members are substantially, you know, a lot lower than the value you get. So those were the recommendations coming out of the committee and what we built into the budget. And then just a couple of weeks ago, we again met with the finance committee, and we're about to cover the slides that we went over with them, but they did approve this happening today and moving the budget forward to the executive committee as a preview. And let's just jump into some of those key budget assumptions. One, we know costs have been going up the past couple of years, so we did take a line-by-line approach to budget, I would say rather conservatively, and put cushion in the numbers. Hopefully not too much, it's a fine balance, but we don't want to get caught later. So we were pretty conservative there. I mentioned the ERP system again. This is going to be a pretty significant expense this year and next budget year. A lot of one-time costs going into that. The classification and compensation study, first one CBAG did in 50 years. That's taking full effect starting July 1st. So that's certainly a big piece of this budget. And then interest rates. We were pretty conservative on our budget there. We know there are relatively high uncertainty with where those are going to go in 2024. So we projected a little bit less than we might get this year. And key budget areas, we know that CBAG staffs, I'm a finance director for the CBCC, and DCE2 has a lot of our staff wear multiple hats from those agencies, and they're under staffing agreements that you know, they're gonna have their own budget, and the CBAG portion will tie into those at each of those agencies. And of course, TV Link. I mean, how cool is that when you drive around and you see people riding on that pathway? We budgeted over $33 million for construction and running next year. And then we have CVC, another major program. I don't know who's taken the 111 recently, but I certainly noticed. Does anyone notice how quickly you can fly through these lights now? Well, not fly through the lights, but progress along the series of lights. So that's pretty neat. Big expenses going on there next year. Just want to mention the majority of this funding is all external funding. We have federal dollars, we have state dollars. We have the majority of this is extra money that CVAG is bringing to our Coachella Valley for these projects. And that's pretty, really inspiring, I know, for all of our staff to work with. Of course, we have the housing program and our Inland Regional Energy Network. Maritimes, you know a lot about that. And that's really ramping up as we move forward and move to all of your cities. All right, so let's just move on to our general fund. We are projecting a net excess, which basically is like net income, right? Just a governmental accounting lingo of $231,000. CVAG doesn't have any property taxes that we can levy, and we don't have TOT that we can charge. So our net excess really comes from our membership dues and, of course, investment income. And I like to point out that we do look at our general fund as helping to shield a CVAG and its member agencies from certain liabilities. If something haywire to happen down the line, and that liability might go to a member's jurisdiction. So that's what a healthy general fund will help protect. And we can see here, these are in millions, but basically we start the year with a little over $2 million. We end up $231, and our general fund balance is gonna end next year budgeted at a little over $2.3 million. And let's just look at the agency-wide highlights next. So these are in the millions, right? So last year's budget on the left, this year's budget on the right. And you can see we're looking to bring in about $90 million next year. And that's just for transportation funding. We saw, or at least, you know, the majority of that's going to CVLink and CVC. But we saw all the regional materials and different projects starting up. Especially in the East Valley, you know, some stuff going on. And then you just look at that compared to the other programs, you can really see where the money's flowing through, the big dollars. And the general fund's just that little tiny slice at the top. And just want to look at the expenditures real quick. Basically the same picture. It's all transportation money for the most part. And of course, we have other very important programs. They just don't play into the budget as significantly as transportation does. So we are looking at a net excess agency-wide next year, which is great. And just want to lead you to our next steps. Of course, here's today, Mayor Evans' birthday. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
So, you know, I talked quite a bit. I hope not too much. Oh, good. I'm under what I thought I would be for our time. And we have a couple weeks, though. We're at the El Paseo office, JJ and myself, we're here to answer any questions. So if you need anything or feel like you have any comments to make in between now and when we adopt the budget on June 26th at the Pinion Parlor, right? Is that where we're meeting this? Yeah. That's our next step, really, though, is budget adoption on the 26th.
This is an information item, but if there are any questions, I'm sure it's possible.
That's right.
Answer them now or later.
Yeah, I just want to comment on, you know, I read the draft from start to finish. I had a little time while the Barron Brownies were breaking, so jammed through that. Just a great recap on, there is amazing work that's being done by this organization. When you look at other areas, the regionalization really does work here, and it has for a long time, and your executive summary there was outstanding, and I know, Claude, you've just really brought us into modern times since you started, so this is your
third budget.
Yes. So congratulations for you and your team on a job well done.
I appreciate that comment.
All right. Well, if there are no other questions, this information item. So we will move on now to item number C. This is the result from the feasibility study to identify a sustainable revenue stream. Peter.
Good afternoon, Chair, members of the committee. Before I hand it over to the brains of the operation behind me, I just want to provide some quick context about the study that we're going to be presenting to you. It was funded under the Regional Early Action Planning Program, funded by the state of California's Department of Housing and Community Development, which is the same agency that's reviewing all of your housing elements. And it was funneled through the Southern California Association of Governments, i.e. SCAG. One thing I want to note is that these monies were explicitly dedicated to planning. So Tri-Community could not put any of these funds toward building actual houses. So after feedback from our transportation committee, our homelessness committee, and our executive committee, we arrived at this feasibility study to try to identify a sustainable revenue stream for affordable housing and associated infrastructure. Finally, I kind of want to place some parameters around this study before we get into the meat of it. One thing you'll notice is, as we go through, it operates at both a local and a regional level. And I want to stress here that it's being provided solely for the purposes of discussion and contemplation among committee members and perhaps any staff that are here as well. Implementation of any of the ideas presented in the plan at the local level is entirely at the discretion of the local agency, and CBAG is not planning on taking any action to implement this at the regional level. So just some ground setting there. It's really a, hey, isn't this kind of cool thing worth considering? But with that, I'd like to hand it over to Villegas from Cosmont Companies, who is going to kind of give an overview of the study and results there.
Good afternoon, Chair, members of the committee. Here, my name is Joe from Cosmont Companies. We are also pleased to be joined by Jessica Arlo from our consulting sub-consultant, our outreach sub-consultant, Ariana Associates, who will be available to assist with any questions on the outreach. Make sure I have those slides here. All right, as Peter covered, we were tasked to prepare a regional strategic plan meant to be a tool for member agencies to implement for those who wanted to. More than just assembling ingredients for a set of revenue tools and policy tools, our task was actually put them in a together in sort of a way that could actually make some sense, could have some implementation and feasibility for member agencies, those willing to actually implement. There are four main components of this regional strategic plan meant to address ongoing sustainable funding for housing and transportation infrastructure. The crux of it is an ongoing sustainable revenue stream. I'll cover in a minute in more depth, but in our case, we're talking about tax increment financing, not a new tax. Tax increment financing, I'll cover what that is, as the ongoing sustainable revenue stream to be supported by several other components. One of them is one-time revenue. Think of things like grants, monetization of assets through sale or ground leasing of land, things like that. Another key component are policies, things that are good to do on their own for supporting housing, but very importantly, also increase the feasibility of these other components of this plan, which I'll go into in a moment. And then lastly, implementation tools, where the rubber could actually meet the road, where this revenue could actually be invested into actual projects. We'll talk about several implementation tools. So several ingredients, but it's sort of combining them in a meaningful way, in a realistically implementable way. That was our task for CBAG. Just a note on stakeholder engagement, we were privileged to meet in several forums with several committees of CBAG throughout the engagement. We started in January 2022, even before then. We actually attended a homelessness committee, even before we got started, when our agreement was approved, just to get some good feedback. And that was very important for us to place some parameters on what we were doing pretty well, what to look at, what not to look at, what is tolerable, what is implementable within this region. So along the way, we've had several briefings with homelessness committee as our main committee guide, but also several separate community meetings where we invited a combination of city staff, developers, literized implementers of housing in the region, and open to the public. Anyone who wanted to learn more about what the study was about, who wanted to provide feedback into what the study was about, and that has gone on throughout the duration of our study with our last community meeting, actually just occurring last month in May. Virtually. I mentioned the crux of this plan is ongoing sustainable revenue. One of those key forms of input that we received even before we got started in January 22 was that a new form of tax or an increased form of tax would not really be tolerated by the member agencies. And so that left us with what could provide a ongoing sustainable revenue stream without adding new tax. We arrived at tax increment financing or TIF as the main mechanism. To be very clear, it's not a new tax, it is very obvious, so apologies. We always find that it's worth spending a minute on, make sure we're all speaking the same language.
The idea would be this somewhat similar to the Urban Development Agency, where you draw a boundary where there's a community around a specific set of parcels, a specific neighborhood. There's complete flexibility in how you draw that boundary. And as the set property value grows over time, a local agency could voluntarily choose to dedicate some portion of the future property tax from within that boundary into a special purpose fund or a restricted purpose. In this case, it could be affordable housing and related infrastructure. The key benefit for cities, to talk about cities for a moment, is when you can achieve a partner. So oftentimes you take the retirement account analogy, where a city could be putting aside some piece of their future property tax within the boundary of a retirement account. And the most bang for the city's buck is when you get a partner like the county, let's say, matching some portion of that allocation or a set of projects or categories of projects that are deemed mutually beneficial for that city and county. So they are truly meant to be regional in nature, but they have also been implemented many times across the state, 23 times so far, for both local and regional projects. We evaluated a series of scenarios, just scenarios. Ultimately, for any agency that wanted to implement, that agency would have complete ability to customize everything from the boundary to what percentage of future revenue to seeking partnership with another agency like the county, and obviously for the selection of projects, what actually the money gets spent on. In our evaluation of scenarios, to try to be helpful, to try to be realistic for the member agencies, we have a range of funding capacity along the lines of $137 million to $343 million in present value of the answer.
Sorry, quick question. 137 to 343 million for what time period?
It is a 50-year present value, because economists like to talk about what the money is actually worth today to account for inflation, increasing costs of construction and things like that. But these districts can be, you know, sort of 5 or 10 years in duration, up to approximately 50 years. That's another factor that a local agency can completely customize how long it's in place for.
Thank you.
And you're saying that that's for any given city or for this region?
It would be the total for the region.
It's broken down by city. I say it's broken down by city.
Yes. And I'll apologize. We're trying to do our best to summarize over 100 pages of report. We'd love it if you review it. If you don't expect that, you will review it. Lots of things to do. That's not the point of the report. It's meant to be a resource to your agencies and to your staff or those interested in implementing the report. Absolutely has breakdowns by community, by timing, threshold, duration, et cetera. So that $137 and $343 million is meant to be that ongoing crux of the funding, ongoing, sustainable, reliable funding, which is key in the eyes of the private sector and philanthropies that oftentimes partner with these agencies. But a big part of our plan is, okay, what can you do with that platform? It's not just about that ongoing, sustainable revenue. What can you do with it to track yet other complementary funding? So we talk about a series of sources that can be pursued and actually be more competitive, or agencies to be more competitive for complementary funding if they do pursue that ongoing, sustainable, fast increment financing. We talked about in our report many state and federal grants with a very close alignment to the types of projects we're talking about here, both at the state and federal level. Talk about various types of fee programs that could be implemented if the agency so chose. Linkage fees and loop fees, different types of fees. We spent a good amount of time in our report talking about planning strategies, planning incentive programs, things like community benefit programs. And by the way, almost all of these, it's not like all of this is new to the region. We have to acknowledge that many of the communities are already doing portions of these tools. Our job was just sort of to compile what is going on in this region and elsewhere and have it in one place in this regional strategic plan at the disposal of the member agencies that they so chose. It's fun to clarify. Some of these sound familiar. Your jurisdiction may already be doing some of these things. Public finance liquidity strategy, that's that item I mentioned a moment ago about monetization of land, whether it's through sale or ground lease of land. Okay, so we're not calling them sustainable ongoing revenue because it's very hard to predict any of these things, but they absolutely can be a key part of the puzzle in bringing in sort of a total bucket of funding for projects. And we always have to coffee these days, everything about surplus land act, as you probably already know, when you talk about monetization of land, happy to have a discussion about that if you want to do. maybe we'll have, yeah, too much time. We don't have enough time to go into that. So in addition to the funding tool, we could not ignore the supporting policy initiatives. We mentioned them because, again, they're good on their own, but we also have to point out that they improve the capacity of these funding tools to actually work. That's why we're talking about them in our regional strategic plan. And you know, the sort of a good example of a set of housing supportive policies is the state's pro housing designation policy, which some agencies are already pursuing in this region, by the way. So just some examples of what that means. There are different categories of what those incentive programs are, or what those policy initiatives are. One category is favorable zoning and land use policies. So think of things like reduced parking requirements for certain types of development. There are policies that accelerate housing production timeframes. So things like streamlining, one-stop shop permitting, other types of policies that reduce construction and development costs. So that's something like prototype housing plans for missing middle housing types, duplex, triplexes, things like that. And then there's this whole category in that pro housing program called policies that provide financial subsidies to housing development. And guess what? In that are actually listed things like taxing financing districts, EIFPs, or enhanced infrastructure financing district, or participation in regional trust funds. Those are explicitly called out as items that show an agency is pro-housing and just illustrates how the various blocks of our regional strategic plan are interrelated. It's not just sort of a cycle, they're interrelated. So some of those implementation tools, as I just hinted at, community land trusts have been used in this state and nationwide as a way to develop and manage affordable housing. Regional housing trust funds are becoming more and more commonplace, not only in California, but across the state. And we, in our regional strategic plan, go as far as to highlight the actual existing Lift-A-Rise Catalyst Fund as an example of something that has already has some existing infrastructure in this region, a development pipeline, a network of private sector and philanthropic investors. When our regional strategic plan highlights that if agencies do want to go down this route with this regional strategic plan, it may make sense to utilize this existing infrastructure that already exists with the Catalyst Fund. Again, for those that are interested, it may make sense to not reinvent the wheel if folks so chose. So, a quick illustration of how this all relates, and I'll be careful of time here. First thing I have to say is, again, any agency could have the choice to implement any part of this, but our goal is to put together a framework that could actually work in our experience, having done these sorts of districts statewide in the past. So those agencies that would want to implement this form at a city level, as an example, and enhanced infrastructure financing district, that very common type of taxing front financing. The purpose of that fund would be, yes, to generate ongoing sustainable revenues for housing, but also to increase your priority for complementary funding such as grants. Again, there are especially state grant programs that are literally saving getting more points on your grant application for having pro-housing things in place, like EIFPs. It would also be the crux. EIFP fund is one of those examples of a supporting housing policy, but aside from that, can be sort of further bolstered by complementary things going on, like missing middle housing types, again, one-stop shop permitting, all these other things sort of feed into each other. The idea is all these ingredients can come together to support an agency's own sort of local choice, high priority housing and infrastructure projects. First and foremost, that's the idea here for an agency to prioritize its own projects on its own. We think that's the only way any agency would do this. They do it at all. All the components come together. But then there's the idea of this regional approach. That's why sort of CBAG is at the table, being a regional entity. The idea where if some portion of the total revenue is put aside in a separate pot, a regional pot, such as the Catalyst Fund or the Regional Housing Trust Fund, that not only is that another exemplification of a supporting housing policy, which also improves your competitiveness for grants and these other complementary sources, but it's also a way to have some flexible funding that can be implemented across the region for those agencies willing to contribute and take a part of that. And we think for counties statewide, there needs to be a regional way for counties to be interested. It's an arbitrary statewide There needs to be a regional aspect for counties to be willing to be a partner to cities in these sorts of districts. So that's the regional component of this regional strategic plan. It's not necessary for EIFs to work, but it's the sort of step that this regional strategic plan takes to emphasize that potential regional connection. So next step is the last slide here. The action for today is to consider receiving and authorize the distribution of this regional strategic plan to your member agencies. So if you have any feedback you'd like to share today. Very important, you know, just reiterate the point that Peter made. This is not, you know, it's not CVAC taking an action on behalf of the member agencies. This is about making a resource available for any member agencies that are interested in pursuing. Further, that could be a plan to do so. And we just highlight that for any communities that are interested in going down this path, there are further funding resources to actually implement. If you're going to implement it at all, we often say, might as well do it with other people's money. You have agencies like SCAG 3.0 that are specifically highlighting these sets of tools and what they want to fund in this next round of SCAG refunding. So completely separate from this work, again, just available for any agencies that wish to implement.
Well, we appreciate that presentation. Are there any questions from the committee members? Either Peter or both from the
There's zero mention of how this relates to RENA obligations. And when you're looking at pooling funds, this has been the crux legislatively for a long time, even out here when we were trying to collaborate. Is pooling funds to get units built still is a punishable offense from Sacramento's standpoint. So was there any consideration or was it really strictly about a revenue stream study?
I'd love to solve that problem. All there was discussion on our part. We certainly wanted to stay in our lane, you know, we're not a lobbyist. We do, because we have the audience sometimes with HCD and some of our legislators are always bringing up those sorts of things. You've had the privilege of working for many of your communities separate from this work directly for your cities. We know that's like a key carrot that's going to make this actually interesting or more interesting, but we don't take it that far. We do think it is a legislative point that would improve efficacy of this tool and lots of tools. We are seeing other communities try to make that work, Santa Monica and Palmdale, other communities actually trying to work together, saying, let's share, see what we can do. BCD hasn't budged yet. I wish I had better news to share more that we can do. But I acknowledge the comment that they agree.
I think that you've already answered this question for me, but the City of Indian Wells is actively involved right now in creating our own EIFD and CFD and all kinds of, so once we get that done, there's really no going back because there's no overlapping, correct?
Exactly right. Your community has implemented or is already implementing, you can put two of these asking for financing districts on top of one another. You could do two in a community that don't have geographic overlap. But like any wells, if you're already in the boundary, you're already in the game, we don't want to kind of take your course off track, you couldn't do both. There's an ability to amend the plan if that were your will, if that were the city's will. But no, this could happen at the same time as one that you already have going, which you wouldn't stick your result in.
But if we haven't completed yet in the county of Riverside or anybody would be willing to work with us on that and we haven't finished it yet, we can change course.
We would say absolutely yes.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Just very quickly, just to measure how aware people are of what's going on around the Salt Sea area. We have created an EIFD there already, which is specific to the surrounding area, meaning the North Shore, Mecca, Oasis, our tribal government, 29, Torres Martinez, Did I say Oasis? And so that's one avenue that we're using as a tool to help mitigate and to help us in the future build up the economic development efforts of that specific region. I know in the past, Indian Wells has approached us to talk about potentially doing an EIMP. It was a conversation for a while, and then COVID hit, and I think we stopped talking about it.
I'm happy to come back and talk more.
Yeah, I'm sure. And so we'll see where that takes us. Not to say that we're not in support, or we are. It's just a matter of, I think for us, our priority was trying to figure out at that time how to use this new tool for the Song Sea, specifically the surrounding area. I think now that we have accomplished that and have our board already settled, we already got our boundaries. You know, we got some more work to do, but at least we got the preliminaries done. I think we'll be ready now to have that further conversation. But I say that out loud to everybody just because of this conversation that's taking place.
And you've expanded what was originally in Salt Sea area. You've expanded it well
beyond. No, we're going to be actually a lot larger than that. We decided to actually shrink it down to just the unincorporated areas of the Salt Sea area, as opposed to including, for example, Mont Pointe. We were having a discussion. It is a regional issue. Should we include the entire Coachella Valley? And then, no, maybe not. Maybe we should bring it down to the city of Indio and Coachella, maybe even La Quinta. And I said, no, because it's really, we're just really trying to figure out how we can bring infrastructure that's much needed in an area that really clearly lacks it. Not to say that Indio doesn't need it, or La Quinta doesn't need it, or Coachella doesn't need it, but clearly, Mecca, Oasis, North Shore, Thermal, those areas are very much needed, especially the tribal government that we have over there with Jose Martinez, and just the efforts that are going to be ongoing with South Sierra. So it was much larger, then it actually got smaller, and now
it's even more narrow.
Even more narrow now. Right.
Good feedback.
I think this is an excellent report in terms of just the different strategies and options that are available for financing. Like the executive director, I truly believe that we have another side, which is kind of legislatively trying to make our region competitive for the ongoing state dollars that are available for affordable housing to meet that funding gap. That's one of the things that's probably most disappointing, is that we don't compete well in this region, whether it be because of Sunline, we don't have rapid transit, rather because of our density, rather because we're not urban enough. But to me, that there's a huge tale of two Californias, the urban and suburban rural areas. And we need to do everything we can to just make sure that affordable housing dollars are coming out. And I know our executive director is on
this. Absolutely.
Yeah, so I'll move staff recommendation.
Second.
Motion. Second. Any other questions? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 We got E5. Joey?
Yes.
Yes.
Any no's, any abstentions? There are none. We will move forward now with item number D. This is a land board in 7. For increasing available units for permanent housing.
Thank you, Chair, committee members. Welcome to this. As you all know, and as this report talks about, we are in need of affordable housing units here in the Coachella Valley. When you talk about our CB Housing First program, some of your cities have come to Tom and said, what if we paid you double? Could you double your numbers? And we said, no. And that's because, not because we don't have complete faith in our team, but because we need units. We need houses to exit our clients to permanently. And when you talk about clients who are formerly homeless and have challenges from being on the streets and are in vouchers, the selection of those units gets even tighter. I'll use the example. This is a real example from the city of Indio recently. We found our client a unit at $1,900 a month. But our client had a voucher that only paid $1,750. And some of you might say, well, $150 a month, let's pay it, get them permanently housed. And unfortunately, the rules with vouchers say you can't do that. What you can do is incentivize landlords to work with you.
This landlord incentives is a program where you're kind of modeling this after the city of Riverside, and the county also has a similar program. And essentially, it is a one-time payment, upfront payment to the landlord to encourage them to look at your client and to work with them and make the unit work for them. Based on what we've seen from other communities, we're proposing a $600 per unit payment that would be given to landlords that we're already working with. Frankly, many of our clients go to, we have landlords who have multiple properties. So known our program is going to deliver them clients who are ready to be in permanent housing solutions. And to incentivize new landlords, we would recommend a $1,000 payment for the first unit. These would be one-time payments. This is a little bit different than the way our Housing First program has been operating now. We are seeking your authorization to implement this program. The Homelessness Committee did look at this and encouraged us, did recommend, support the recommendation, and encouraged us to come back in the fall with an analysis of how it is working and whether the amount is enough to incentivize. I'm happy to address any questions.
Any questions?
So I have a question. So, I mean, I support this increase, but in the case you provided with $150 short per month, the $600 or the $1,000 doesn't even cover that. How does that work for the landlord if we're not able even to make up the difference via a landlord incentive?
Yeah, it's a great question. And what I'll explain how cities have seen it work and how the county has seen it work. And that is the landlord knows that they're getting guaranteed payments through the vouchers and with a little incentive that they're willing, yes, over the course of the year, the number does not work. But what other cities and communities have seen is that landlords then will reduce the rate to make it work for the voucher. And there is some work that we can do with the county to do some analysis. If we really get into a bind and they do some comparative to other area rents and see.
And by the way, if this doesn't work, we may be back in 6 months suggesting that we increase that one-time payment.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it'd be a good idea, I'm sorry. Okay. Maybe it'd be a good idea to figure out how Live to Rise worked on this program. And then maybe we can even bring in someone from the county, like Greg Rodriguez, who worked on these type of programs, to try to explain how these efforts have grown. Quite frankly, and have been a model for the rest of the state of California. I'm not the expert in this, but it may be helpful to everybody here on the dais. Do with you?
Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you for the report. I did just notice that our staff is looking, or you know, your staff is looking at filling in all these gaps in our system, which we're seeing in our community when we refer people to the program. So really appreciate you guys looking to fill those gaps and looking at other cities to see what everyone else is doing that's working out there in those other cities. My only question is, at what point is that payment made? Is that upon signing of the lease or?
Yes, with proof of a 1 year, at least a 1 year lease. It's not uncommon for us to help with some moving costs, right? In terms of helping our clients get in the door. And that is also something we don't process until we have a lease in place.
Thank you.
And does this apply also to the units that, quote, Housing First owns or possesses, where there's a less frequent than a year stay?
No. And our leases, CVAC lease with the landlord. Our clients don't have a lease with the landlord. We have the lease. Those are at least 1 year. But that's not what we have not experienced a situation where we need to come to you for that one.
So we need to have that an allowable use, should that be?
No, because they're not subject to voucher and voucher control.
Okay, perfect.
We're free from the federal regulations
in
those cases.
Yeah, it's a little more flexible. All right, I'll move staff approval.
Motion by the chief.
Second.
Second by Indian. Any other questions? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
D5 and Blythe. D5
is
aye. Any
no? I said aye.
Seeing none, we will now move on to item number E. This is the completion of CVC phase one. Eric?
Good evening,
Honorable Chair and Executive Committee members. We're in a celebratory mode with birthdays and posters, and now with Signal Sync. And you see what you want?
Upgrades to traffic signals around the valley. Upgrades to traffic signals around the valley are aimed at reducing congestion on local streets. News Channel 3's Jacob Grossi tonight has more on this. Project to synchronize traffic lights that officials say is already.
This is a project that's been in the works now for years. Right now, we are inside the CV Sync Traffic Management Center, where a lot of the different traffic lights across the valley are being monitored from to make your commute across the Coachella Valley easier. Block by block on major thoroughfares across the Coachella Valley, traffic flow is being controlled.
This is intended really to allow people to move from point A to point B more effectively.
The project is called CV Sync. It's the effort by the Coachella Valley Association of Governments to synchronize traffic lights valley-wide, reducing traffic and emissions while cutting minutes out of commutes. Headquartered in Palm Desert, this regional control center allows operators to monitor conditions and make adjustments to signals and traffic flow.
If we're looking at this particular intersection in Indian Wells, we can actually see what the signals are doing out there in real time.
Most of the time, the system works on its own, but it's especially useful to take control during special events or severe weather when traffic congestion can choke valley streets.
When the tennis tournament ends, and we'll be watching it, and we have 10,000 people leaving at the same time, that they're able to coordinate the signals.
So far, signals are coordinated along Ramon Road, Highway 111, and Washington Street. But over the next 2 years, 19 more corridors will be connected in the $100 million Phase 2.
The Fred Warings, the Vista Chinos, the Monroes.
With a growing valley and more traffic than ever, control over the chaos coming at a crucial time, with more green lights still ahead. Jake Ingracia, News Channel 3, Palm Desert.
So that was a very good summary, and we have made no small plans. If you've seen that slide, I'm very excited. We made very big plans. And now in past tense, we can talk that we have standardized, we have modernized, we have synchronized, and we've done all that regionally. We've prepared for the future, and we've reduced greenhouse gas emissions. We've done that on Highway 111, Ramon and Washington, our three top priority corridors. And we've also done it in every one of their jurisdictions, including the county and including Caltrans, where we put traffic operations centers and the same capability and access to this regional transportation management center that Tom was explaining. So again, past tense, we've done it. We're not done, we're continuing. With phase two, it's actually 21 more corridors with the three corridors you added. And we are still fine tuning. That's a part of the plan. We'll be fine tuning basically in perpetuity. But this summer, especially the first summer, seasonal timing, we'll do the same thing in the fall, same thing every season and for the events. So we'll continue to see fine tuning. We have a number of items, as I mentioned in the staff report, that we're carrying forward. We're ending phase one, moving to phase two, things that weren't available, supply chain items, things where we still haven't gained right away, or perhaps it's software that's upgraded since we started the project and we're still completing the upgrade. Those will be done in phase two. We have to take care of the final payments and the final change order. Those can be done, we believe, under Tom's authority, the amount of the change order. And that stimulates the notice of completion, which we'll file with the county. And that was our recommendation, was to authorize the executive director to enter into, to record that and enter into that notice of completion. I'm happy to answer any questions in general.
Any questions?
So the supply chain issue is the reason why we're running under budget?
Yes. Phase one, we're gonna draw a line in the sand, separate it, move to phase two. And for those items that aren't there, either for supply chain or because of upgrades that we're still in the process of making, those.
And I know you get a lot of updates on signal synchronization because it is a big deal. And I know that when our Caltrans director came up to see our relatively modest room upstairs, it's a lot smaller than the Caltrans traffic management centers in the state. And it's really different. When you go to Caltrans, it looks like a Houston Space Center, but they can't touch a signal in another jurisdiction. So you're on a freeway system and you need to adjust something in a city nearby or a county. It is a big deal that we've done what we've done. Politically, sure, some political will involved, and just bureaucratically. And I know our city managers are asking, when we have a problem, who do we call? We're working out some of those bugs. And Chris is well positioned, and Eric is too, to work with your staff to make sure that happens. Our public knows who to call when there are problems. We're hopeful that your trip down Highway 111 and the other two corridors is already better. Of course, it's summer, so it should be getting a little bit better anyway, but yeah, we'll take credit for it. With that, you do have a staff recommendation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we appreciate the fact that staff's willing to get the feedback loop from all of our jurisdictions to work out the kinks. And you used a lot of good adjectives earlier. You didn't do that today.
Right.
It is beautiful.
Yeah, and it was pretty cool to hear the engineer, you know, use those words, but we're really proud of this project. Is there a motion to approve?
There's
a motion. There's a second. All right. And all those in favor, if there are no other questions, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Is an aye as well.
Aye.
Is there any no's? Any abstentions? See that? Motion carries. And we'll move on to item number F. This is the next steps for addressing climate change emergency and standing storms, otherwise called taxes on the Indian Canyon.
Good evening, distinguished chair, members of the committee. This item relates to Fleming Bosan and our regional materials in Western Coachella Valley. I'll just provide a little bit of context. We're talking about the western area of our valley where we're experiencing flooding and road sand issues. We do know that there is a sand transport area that intersects Indian Canyon and Gene Autry, similar to arterials that are most widely impacted, although we do have impacts in areas of Desert Hot Springs and Cathedral City. When you overlay, this is an overlay of the flooding areas with some of those regional materials I just mentioned, and when you mix the low sand with rain and flood, this is what we see. Here's the upper left is the image from February 14th, a couple of years ago, and again, some of the very severe health and public safety issues that impact here in the valley. One of the first solutions that was brought up was building a bridge all across my 10 to Palm Springs, but it is cost prohibitive. And so thinking outside the box with some value engineering, we were able to look at some solutions that significantly reduce the cost. We brought up this as a priority to Antonio Villarosa on his trip in December, not only in Coachella, but also in Palm Springs. And given identification of the problem, we found a potential funding source that was prime. Long-awaited funding opportunity, partially funded by federal protect dollars under the bill, the bipartisan infrastructure law, and also partially funded by the state, and is to enhance mobility and protect campus infrastructure from climate threats, which is exactly what we are experiencing. This cycle has $206.5 million, a max funding per project of $50 million, and a tribal set aside of 5%. And a match of 20%. And given this funding opportunity, we hope to bring in some money and really get the return on investment for future generations. And again, that's hopefully what we would live like in November when they award the projects. This has been a priority of Lester at CBAG as identified by planning the BOSAN study that further looked into it. But it's also been prioritized by the community through their informal Facebook process. And so you haven't followed this page, I encourage you to do so. 14,000 followers on this page. And this, when I did this PowerPoint on May 31st, there's still updates. I got an update today. You asked me if it's open or closed. Yeah. It's open. So if you have a good phone screen, it's open. This is a quick image of what it is and what we potentially could build there. And we are looking at adding some elements that would align with the state goals of climate adaptation and reducing greenhouse gases, such as active transportation, some renewable energy generation that also conserves its shade, and the multi-benefit project that also protects the environment and protects artificial lizard and other protected species in that area. So incorporating those nature-based solutions must be a key part of the project. Guiding review was in May. We will be doing the West Community Engagement. We do have a meeting with our Palm Springs Community Engagement team tomorrow, Desert Hot Springs team on Wednesday. We'll be working on the grant proposal this month and next month. It's due the end of July, the deadline, maybe July 31st, and the award announcements are in November. Again, this is a very prime opportunity that has been long awaited. And our recommendation is a two-part. One is endorsing the ACCESS acronym, which is addressing climate change, emergencies, and sandstorms. That was through a friendly in-house competition that we submitted some names, and we do have old Eric Fauci lunch. Talk about coupon. It's just an authentic Mexican. And to authorize the executive director to commit regional transportation dollars should we get the grant awarded. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
City of Desert Hot Springs.
No. No questions, just comments. Staff is doing a fantastic job on this. You know, it's been on my radar for years. We were, meaning Councilmember Middleton and I were able to meet with staff at CBAG a couple of days ago last week and talk about what this will look like over time. Obviously, we're not going to build it tomorrow, but there is a funding pot right now that we're hoping to get some dollars out of it. If so, it'll help with the first piece of many pieces to continue access to our trauma center, which is very dear to our heart as Hot Springs. People, not to be dramatic, but have died because they couldn't get to the trauma center fast enough. So this is a key piece of that, and hopefully it'll trickle down to the other projects. We received some grant funding from the Congressman's office to do some studying in Desert Hot Springs. And if this was to move forward, it'd be great. And in February, when we met with Mayor Vigorosa, I know he got 600 people in his ear trying to get funding, but it was a really great trip that we were able to put together, and his staff was able to see it firsthand by us stopping there, getting them out of the car and seeing the sand. They actually had a loader lifting dirt from the street, putting it back on the west side where it'll blow right back over, but there's nowhere on the east side to put it. So there has to be other solutions, and this is the beginning.
Yeah, Councilmember Middleton was here earlier today, and Palm Springs has been very much supportive of this project. Palm Springs did thank CVAG and staff and the transportation commission, because it was there that the refining of the project took place. The first iterations of the project were very, very expensive, and now it's two phases, but with the same mitigation. And so they were very, very grateful. And they also wanted to thank staff for finding this grant opportunity. So just kudos to all of you, but hopefully we can work with our federal legislators as well. We have a congressman and appropriations that can assist. And hopefully we can lean on our congressional friends to better get us through.
Go move.
Yes.
Second.
Yes, motion and a second. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 tonight. Somebody said aye.
Yes, said aye.
District 5, is this still on? Looks like they might have turned off. But okay, is there any no's or opposition? No, no abstentions. Motion carried. We'll move on now to item number 9, which is an information note piece. And we'll move on to item number 10, legislative items.
Aaron Taft, here we go.
Aaron, you available here? We'll leave you online.
Yeah, 1 second,
Aaron. Yeah.
Her report was fine. Don't shoot the messenger.
Yeah. Okay, I'm Hold here. Down. Sorry, I had to get in as a panelist. So, am I up?
You're up.
Okay, thank you. Sorry. I do have a more extensive report in your packet if you want to look at that, but I did just want to highlight a couple of things for you. You know, it's been a very busy legislative year. We have many, many, many new legislators, and they're still trying to get kind of their footing, trying to figure it out, but it's actually been pretty positive. It seems like they're a little bit more willing to work with us, to take amendments, to, you know, hear what we're saying. So there's a huge budget deficit. I'm sure you've all been hearing about that. The governor's projecting about $35 billion deficit. And then next year and the year after, the LAO is saying it's going to be about $18 billion. So this is really impacting everything that's happening in Sacramento. Typically, a lot of bills get put in suspense and then they make it out. Pretty much the governor has said, if there's a big price tag, it's not going to make it. Many bills died this year because of that or have become two-year bills. So it gives us a little bit more time, but there are still things moving through. A couple of items that are definitely positive are some of the behavioral health measures. There's SB 43 and SB 363. Those are both moving forward. It helps with behavioral health treatments to really make sure that people that need have the highest needs are getting the care that they can. So we've supported those moving forward. Some of the housing legislation, even though they don't have significant price tags, have been held up, but some are still moving forward. SB 423, which is the extension of SB 35 by Senator Wiener, is still moving forward. And even though it was amended, we're still opposed. I know we did a big coalition letter that many of you signed on to, so thank you for that. We're going to continue to oppose that one. But two bills that have stalled for this year are SB 7, which would have created new housing obligations for all of you based on your point in time counts. I know that some of you have been talking about this, and AB 550 would have required all of you to agendize your point in time count results and talk about how you plan to solve some of your homelessness issues. Both of these have been held, and the authors are willing to work with us. So I think moving forward, we'll definitely see better versions of the bills. There is one bond that we're supporting. It's AB 1657. It's a $10 billion bond to help with affordable housing. That is still moving forward. I sent out an action alert recently. So I definitely would encourage all of you to support that. It goes along with our budget asks. I know we've been asking for $3 billion annually for funding for affordable housing and homelessness. A couple other bills that I wanted to highlight. I know that this one was receiving a little bit of attention recently. It's AB 742. This would prohibit police using the canines to apprehend suspects if they were off leash. This bill is currently dead for the year. So definitely some good news. Thank you for all of you with your support for that. And another bill that I know a lot of you have been asking about, so I wanted to bring this up, is SB 584. This has to do with the short-term rentals, and it would impose a statewide 15% tax on the occupancy of short-term rentals. I know there's a lot of concerns with this. We have a lot of concerns just because we don't want it to compete with some of your TOT or become like some of the other measures where, you know, it's really high, it's going to take away from some of your revenues. The author wants to work with us. So that's why we currently have a pending position. They're willing to look at maybe other revenue sources, because the problem right now is that if the state collects this funding, it's still coming back to locals for affordable housing, which we're asking for. So on the one hand, we're asking for funding, revenue sources, but we don't necessarily think this is the best way. So we're going to be working with the author
to figure out maybe what a different mechanism could be. So stay tuned on that. I know it's still moving forward. If it doesn't seem to stall and become a two-year bill, I know we'll switch to being more formally opposed, but we are working with them. Lastly, I know that this one is definitely something that could help Blythe. It's AB 573. It has to do with the 1383 organic waste requirements. This helps really those rural cities meet their targets by allowing some of those collections out of state. So we're supporting that one, and that's being authored by Eduardo Garcia. Happy to take any questions, but know that it is going to get a little bit crazier and the budget does have to be passed soon. But as in the past, it will likely be a framework budget that's passed, and then they'll continue to work on trailer bills throughout the rest of the year.
Any questions? All right, we'll move on now. We just notified that the CVAG federal and state lobbying efforts doesn't need a verbal report, but it's just that's part of your package. And from that, we'll
move on. With that. Thank you.
Yeah, we'll move on with now to item number 11, which is public comments on non-agenda items. Is there anyone who would like to address this committee? Seeing none, we'll move on now to item number 12, announcements. The next meeting of the executive committee will be held on Monday, June 26th at 4:30. And the next meeting of the General Assembly will be on June 26th at 6 p.m. So with that, we are
ending. We're not quite adjourned, of course. We're moving to closed session. And a note on closed session, while anybody could stick around, and we'll certainly report out in closed session, we're not expecting any reportable action coming out of closed session. And I expect closed session to be very, very brief.
And I have decided to excuse myself.
All right. Have a good one.
I'll take it from me.
Go fire for this.